Welcome to the show, everyone. Show number 5 of Unjabbed Citizen. I'm your host, Alan Campbell. For a whole bunch of reasons, this week's show is a little bit shorter than most, and I'm running very late, so let's get the show on the road. What I want you to do this week, please, is listen to the interview. Listen carefully, and then spend some time thinking about what's really going on. Most of us understand the impact that this clown show we're in will have on us and our family, but look wider. How will it impact others in your community? How will that impact spread to others, to children, to vulnerable people, and yes, even to jab people? And then, take action. Join a local group. Start a local group. Stand for a local board or other position in your community. Make a stand. We cannot win if we simply engage in social media. We need engagement and action in the real world. Most of you I know are already doing that, and you are the heroes of our time. For those that have not yet joined the fight, now is the time. Yes, you're afraid. You should have a lot to lose, but act anyway, because if you do not, in the end, you will lose it all anyway. The time has come. This is the hill. This is the fight we fight. We win here, or 1,000 years of darkness will cover this earth, and the spirits of our ancestors will curse our names from their graves. And to prove the point, the fear is again being ratcheted up with the discovery of a new variant with a high number of mutations. The new COVID-19 variant called B.1.1.529 is a very unusual constellation of mutations which are worrying because they could help to evade the body's immune response and make it more transmissible, scientists have said. South African scientists have detected more than 30 mutations on the spike protein, the part of the virus that helps it create an entry point for the coronavirus to infect human cells. But wait. The good news is that while it can evade your immune system, it can still be detected by the ever popular and reliable PCR test. Give me a break. Does anyone think more lockdowns and mandates aren't coming? Anyone? Given Britain has already restricted travel from 6 African countries, I think we can all figure out what is about to happen. Just before I introduce our guest this week, from our highly esteemed, competent and revered Dr. Fauci.
Now that you're encouraging all adults to get boosters, what's your definition of fully vaccinated?
You know, right now, officially, John, the definition of fully vaccinated is still 2 doses of the Moderna or Pfizer and 1 dose of J&J. That's the requirement when people talk about what is required for this or for that. But that does not actually contradict the fact that we're saying as vaccine efficacy wanes, you need to get that booster to bring you right up. We will evaluate as we get more data. We don't know now how long the booster effect is going to last.
If anyone is still in doubt that they've been led down the path to hell, then surely this must be a wake-up call. From the vaccine's been 95% effective, to we don't know how long the boosters will last for. If you still can't see that this is nothing more than a mandated subscription service with the added benefit of killing a few of you, then this show can't help you. Cam Slater recently wrote a piece in the BFD. Search it up on DuckDuckGo. Cam Slater, BFD. It's titled, The Growing Unvaxxed Black Market. I'm just going to read a couple of extracts from it. Now that the government's draconian segregation of the vaccinated from the unvaccinated has been rammed through under urgency in just 24 hours, we will start to see a burgeoning black market of people seeking to cater for the new Untermensch that Jacinda Ardern has created. Can't argue with that. This government has fostered and created an army of snitches turned mate against mate, family against family, and now the vaccinated against the unvaccinated. They've dressed it up as a choice, but it isn't a choice when you're actually forced into it with threats or blackmail, or with the reward of getting some, not all, of your freedoms back. But those who are non-compliant will find their way around the infantile rules and restrictions. We always do. And then he goes on to talk about the police. The police are already over it. They are exhausted chasing down rule breakers when they should be chasing actual criminals. Their public support is at an all-time low after they acted like bullies over the gun buyback. Their behaviour in being the jackbooted thugs of the Ardern regime has further eroded public confidence. Does anyone other than the functioning idiot that is our Prime Minister really believe that the police are going to ask restaurant, bar, hairdresser, barber and brothel patrons to show their papers and then drag recalcitrant rule breakers out by the hair? Enforcement will be a joke. And as soon as we realise that it will be a joke, we will cease to comply. So, just cease complying from the get-go. Let's not play these silly games. Let's support the heroes and shun the snitches, vaxxholes, bullies, and their businesses. Hear, hear.
Normally when I interview a guest, I listen to the tape, make some minor edits, and think about what I'm going to say. I interviewed Ross almost a week ago, and I have not yet listened to the tape. The reason for that is I could not bring myself to. This interview is emotional, and I think you'll get that from listening to it. In a word, it is heartbreaking. As you listen to it, I want you to keep some things in mind. Think about New Zealand's suicide rate. Think about the constant hammering we've had about New Zealand's mental health issues. Contrast that with the seriousness of COVID and the likelihood of a vax person passing on COVID compared to an unvax person, where there is little to no difference. Put it all in context and ask yourself, why? Why would our government allow this to happen to Ross?
Here we go.
Hello. Good to see you.
Can you see me now?
I can indeed.
Good.
I can indeed. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Hey. Not too bad, thank you.
Excellent. Look, thanks really. Thanks a lot for taking the time to talk to me. I reached out because I saw a post that you had on Telegram, and it sounded like the vaccine mandates from our wonderful government were going to have quite an impact on your life, and understand that you've got that you deal with horses, and it was either a charity or a youth type thing that you're running. Do you want to tell me a little bit about yourself and then a little bit about that?
Okay, so gosh, I'm a very boring person. Keep flicking out of things. I'm 70 years old. I started a horse trekking business in the late 90s to help a young woman who was had suffered the loss of a very good friend, a boyfriend, through suicide, and she was rapidly heading down the same track. So I came up with the idea of starting a horse trekking business to get her out of bed in the day every day. And I've lost you again.
That's right. I'm still here.
Oh, it's crazy. Are you still here?
I'm still here, yeah.
Okay. So I had three unwanted horses at the time that I'd rescued, so I decided to pair them with this young woman. So we started a horse trekking business. And in the course of that horse trekking, we discovered that there were quite great positive changes came over some of the young people that used to come out trekking. Some of them were in groups of that were having therapy and all the rest of it. So I started doing horse sense classes instead of taking them just out for a trek. And they were hugely successful. And then the young woman met another young man. And so I prepared to close down the trekking business. And there was a bit of an outcry from the people who were benefiting from just being teamed with horses and learning who a horse was as well as what a horse was. And so that's one night I woke up and there was a voice in my head saying, give those people a leg up.
Wow.
And that's how it started. So I've been doing it for nearly 20 years now.
20 years. That's fantastic. Yeah. So how many people do you think you've put through that you've dealt with in that time?
Oh, gosh. Oh, hundreds, thousands. I'm into my second generation.
Is that
right? I've got children coming today whose mothers came. Mm.
Wow, that's fantastic. Mm. Fantastic. Just out of interest, how did you end up rescuing horses? What was the...
From the time I was a very little girl, I had this need to rescue things, and it started with little birds and grew bigger and bigger until they became horses. And I was so mad on horses that my parents knew they had to get me a pony before I went off my trolley, because I used to ride the veranda and ride trees and things, and they thought it was a little bit naff to be seen, you know, on the veranda outside our place riding a veranda. So I got an unbroken two-year-old pony when I was 11 years old. And largely did the breaking in myself and made every mistake in the book, but it was a very valuable experience. And So I loved horses. And when I got older, I became bedridden when I was a teenager, 17 with CFSME. And I spent the best part of the next 20 years, most of the day bedridden. And I had a lot of time to think. And in that time, I actually had a friendship with a wild dolphin that, of course, I was too sick to do anything with until I discovered that I could, by putting on a wetsuit, I could float on the surface of the water. So I made friends with this wild dolphin and out in the inner harbour of Hawke Bay, that near Napier. And the friendship I had with that dolphin really opened my eyes to interspecies contact and relationships. And so when I eventually, through some treatment, to some extent recovered, although I've still got ME, I got on my feet, and one of the first things I wanted to do was get on a horse again. And it took a long, long time to get strong enough. But as I say, I sort of seemed to find myself looking after unwanted animals, and I ended up with these three horses. So that's how the trio began.
I have to say, Ross, your story gave me chills, actually. That's just amazing. How on earth did you befriend a wild dolphin?
Okay. So I was, as I say, bedridden, and I read in the newspaper of a wild dolphin that had appeared in the bay. And it came at the same time as my younger child started school. And so I thought, well, here I am lying in bed, and I can only get up for 2 or 3 hours a day, but I don't have a child under my feet, you know, to care for the whole day. And so maybe I can expend a little bit of the limited energy on going out to look at this dolphin. And I've always had a fairly natural affinity with animals. And just wooed the dolphin, and then he wooed me. And he was a very remarkable, intuitive animal. And the link with the dolphin and horses came one day when I got a phone call to say that the pony I'd got when I was 11 had died. And I felt very, very sad. So the family took me down to look for Horace the dolphin, and he was there. So I put on my wetsuit and I got into the water and I sang him a song, as I used to do. And he chose that day to swim underneath me, take me on his back, and glide around the inner harbour with me on his back as if he was a horse. And I have no explanation for that. I'm not a new ager. I don't do touchy-feely stuff, but that's what he did. And it was so, so moving. And it was the way he reached out to me. And many years later, I realised that horses can do that for the children.
Wow, that's remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. So you grew up in the Hawke's Bay, did you?
Yes, I did.
Right, okay. And where are you now?
I'm just out of Hastings at Bridge Park.
Okay.
The place where I started the trekking was out on the coast in beautiful trekking country. And when I turned it into Leg Up, the landowner wasn't quite so happy for me to be there because of the at-risk youth I was working with. So gave me notice, and I tried to find grazing elsewhere, and nobody wanted us. So in the end, I had to sell my little seaside cottage that I'd turned into a wildlife refuge. I had to sell that, and I'd bought the place. It's a tumble-down old place, but I'd bought it when no one wanted to live in this settlement and sold it when everybody did. So I got enough money to buy a 13.5-acre property, and so Leg Up couldn't be kicked off because it was my home.
Fantastic. Yes, that's awesome. That's awesome. So tell me a little bit more about Leg Up, and I think you called it Horse Sense. How does it actually work? What happens?
Okay, so the first thing to understand that it's not about just getting on and riding a horse. It's about building relationships. So we base what we do with the horses not on performance but on relationship. And that involves taking these kids and pairing them with a suitable horse and teaching them how to build a relationship with another living thing. They tend to relate better to a horse than other human beings because it's usually human beings that have got them into the predicament they're in, you know, but through abuse or neglect or whatever. And so I could sit there and counsel them to within an inch of their lives, but I'm not a counsellor, but I mean, that's what counsellors do. And there is always a number of kids for whom that does not work. So you find another way, and my way was to have them relate to a horse. And it's quite a difficult, it's a bit of a leap because we're predators by nature. We eat, we hunt for our food, we eat meat, and horses are prey. And so horses know that just by looking at us, that we're predators with our eyes in the front and the way we're made. Whereas horses, being prey animals, have got eyes on the side of their heads so they can see all around them. Their ears flick back and forth. They've got long legs to run from danger. And they're panic artists because they have to keep themselves safe. So our job is to prove to the horse that we're not predators and that we can meet them halfway. And that is a really valuable thing for the kids to learn because they're often either subject to bullying or they're bullies themselves. And so working with a horse, they find a way of engaging with another living things without aggression.
Wow, that's so cool. Do you find it, I mean, I guess all horses are different as well. So have you had horses that just haven't been suitable for that type of program? Or
yeah, a lot of our horses most of them have been rescues. So we say we rescue the horses and they rescue the kids. And every now and then you get one that's totally unsuited. So we train them in a different way and then rehome them. But most of them have found a little corner of our world to live in.
Oh, fantastic. That's fantastic. And are the children referred to you from social welfare or parents, or how do they come to you?
They're referred by some from the police, Birthright, Oranga Tamariki, schools, parents, mental health services. You think of something and they refer them to us.
Right. Okay. Mm. All right. So, I mean, you're obviously running an incredibly important service, and obviously helped out an awful a lot of children. How's it going to be impacted by the government mandates?
It's huge. We've already had so we're really up against the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Education, and MSD, Ministry of Social Development, that have put out, I've been sent emails from schools and a wing of Oranga Tamariki and someone else I can't remember so far, saying, could you please reply to this email with your vaccination status? And I'm not vaccinated because of my health problems. I had a health exemption certificate, which lasted all of 2 weeks before they were all revoked, and two other staff members who, for other reasons, cannot be vaccinated, jabbed, not a vaccine. Anyway, so I have replied and said, there's three members of staff are not vaccinated. And so schools have pulled out their children. So we've got three schools still coming, and I have no idea why or how they're doing it, but I'm not saying a word. And we're just waiting until, I'm just waiting until I'm ordered to, or they're ordered to stop coming. But I've had some interesting little things happen with the High and Complex Needs Unit, which sent a message saying that they could not send high and complex needs children to us because of our status. Or would I confirm our status? So I did and told them the truth. And so that was the end of that. And then I had a phone call from them saying, oh, we've looked at it and, you know, you're not going into schools and you're not going into health clinics. You're actually at your own property. So we'll send you out another form and would you tick box number two? And that should make things okay. So I did. So that meant the child could, one child could keep coming. And this child is with multiple agencies. So then I got an email from one of the other agencies saying, no, the kid can't come to you if you're not fully vaccinated. So I rang the mother and said, were you aware that your child can't come to us anymore? And she was steaming mad. And she rang Oranga Tamariki, social worker, and she rang and she was steaming mad. So everybody's confused. And some of them don't know what to do with these high and complex needs kids. And so they're bending over backwards to try and find ways of letting them continue. But the big problem is that with so many pulling out, I can't continue because we won't be able to afford to.
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly typical of the government, isn't it? Creating confusion. Seems to be the only thing that they're good at. I mean, what do you think is going to happen to those children that can't come to you anymore?
Well, I've shed a lot of tears over it. Yeah. And I'm trying to come up with a way of closing down the charity that's been going for nearly 20 years and finding a way to let them come to me privately. The big sticking point will be that I've never been paid for my work. I have done it voluntarily. We've got paid staff, but I'm not one of them. I don't wish to be paid, and I'm on superannuation, and I don't want that to be messed up by red tape and tax bills and all the rest of it. So I need to find a way of having these children coming without me being in any way financially rewarded. But I will have to rehome most of my horses, which is another I can't go there at the moment. I'm not emotionally ready for that yet, but I'm starting to work on it. But I will retain certain horses that are the favourites of some suicidal kids we've got. Just frankly, they're some of them have attempted suicide, and some of them are on the cusp of doing so again. So I want to retain those horses, and the gates will never shut on those kids. I don't care what the government does; the gates won't shut on those kids. But I have to find a way of being able to afford to do it.
I don't know what to say. It's just incredible, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's hideous. Geez. Yeah, he doesn't know what she's doing. They don't know what they're doing. They are destroying lives.
Yeah, yeah. What's your community support like?
Huge. We've got wonderful community support. We have. But my big problem is that I've done a little bit of reading up about it, and apparently I'm what's called a PCBU, a person conducting a business or undertaking. And I have taken advice from an employment law advocate, and he said if I continue to keep these kids coming against the mandate, that I could incur a prison term of 6 months or a heavy fine. And I'm not much use to anybody if I'm in jail, am I?
Right.
Just as I'm not much use to anybody if I take the jab and I die. So I'm just trying to do reach out, continue reaching out to the children and young people without incurring the wrath of the government.
The children know what's going on, and what's their feedback been?
We have school groups and we have individual children that come on their own and they make up a little group of their own. I'm not saying anything. They're just coming. The ones that are still coming, I just act as if nothing's wrong. I've talked to some parents and they're absolutely distraught. But I've said, please don't say anything to the kids yet because we will find a way. But I know that the writing's on the wall. Leg Up will close, and I will close it because there are too many risks now. It's too public, as it were, and I need to find a way of reaching out to these kids in the best way I can. I'm getting old and tired, Alan. I mean, one day I'm going to have to call it quits, but I'll do it when I'm ready, not when someone tells me I have to.
Excellent.
So I've just got to grip my teeth, but I will more than likely be closing Leg Up down in order to do this in a more private manner, and that will keep the kids safer.
I just don't understand it. I mean, obviously got a massive mental health problem in the country. We've got high suicide rates. You know, mental health was meant to be a major focus of this government and this prime minister, and they can't find a way through this. It blows me away. It really does.
It doesn't add up.
No.
If you could see the anxious kids we've got here, there's an epidemic of it. There's a pandemic of anxiety as opposed to other supposed pandemics, but we won't go there either. There is a pandemic of anxiety. So what are we going to do with those? What are we going to do with our kids?
Yeah. In terms of the vaccine itself, is there other people in your community that are following a similar approach, and either for medical reasons or just because they don't want to, are choosing not to get jabbed?
Yeah, there's quite a... it's a minority, of course. But I do know a lot of people who do have very good reasons, and I've got reasons other than medical reasons for not being jabbed. And, most of the people who aren't getting jabbed have done a lot of research. They're not just turning on mainstream media and going by what they're saying. They're doing their own research. I'm very fortunate. I don't have a TV, and I don't turn on my radio, so... I don't know what they're saying, except what filters through. But the people who are against it have very good reasons, good reasons. And it's a choice thing. It's not, it's not even a jab or anti-jab thing. It's a pro-choice thing. And we are all entitled to have sovereignty over our own bodies, and no one can tell us what we do put into our bodies.
No, they certainly shouldn't be able to. It's
no, but they do.
Yeah, they certainly seem to want to. It's not yes. great.
Yes.
So, I mean, what would you say to Jacinda if you had the opportunity?
Oh, probably not. This is not. I don't swear very often. If I could look her in the eye, if I had a chance, I would say, what are you doing? Why are you pushing your own private agenda on the populace of New Zealand? What have you done to our beautiful free country? There's time for you to back off. Yeah.
I know we could get that message through to her. It would be great.
Wouldn't it?
So I mean, you've obviously had an amazing life, to be honest, from everything that you've told me. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell me?
I think all my life has been a preparation, an apprenticeship for this work I do. It was a calling. There was nothing more certain about that. It was a calling. And I spent the first 50 years of my life, nearly 50 years, in apprenticeship for what I'm doing. So as you can imagine, this has come as quite a savage blow. And I always wanted to finish well. I always thought I'd probably be carried out of leg up in a box. the rug's been pulled from under my feet.
I mean, there's obviously been a lot of people around the country impacted in all sorts of different vocations.
And I'm old. I'm lucky. I'm old. I don't have a family to worry about. I don't have a mortgage to worry about, unless when I wind up the trust, I'm required to purchase some of the buildings that have been put on this place for leg up. That's something I have to find out. If that's the case, I can't. So I'll have to, you know, I've already lost one home to leg up, and I might lose another one, but that's how it is. But I am very, very blessed because I don't have a young family. The people who have got mortgages, young children, and some couples have both lost jobs. My heart just goes out to them.
Mm. Yeah, it's certainly a very tough time for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not good.
No. So, I mean, you mentioned earlier that you had a child. Are they close to you, or?
I have two children. They're right now in their, one's 50 and the other's 48. They are probably on the other side of the fence to me where this is concerned. So many families, everyone. Some, you know,
yep.
Doesn't mean you get on with your kids, but I'm not I don't like the way that this socialist government is rapidly becoming a dictatorship. And I think a lot of our children have been brainwashed at school and at university, and they'd see things quite differently. So I don't blame them for taking an opposite view, because at school these days they're not taught how to think, they're taught what to think.
Yeah, that is clearly obvious, which is incredibly sad. And I've seen it with my own children as well. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Try and enlighten them, but it's not always easy.
Mm. It isn't easy because it's pretty well entrenched, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I guess when you think about it, they're at, you know, school for quite a few hours every day, and everyone's saying the same thing to them, and they tend to want to rebel against their parents naturally anyway. So
that's right. It all goes against us, doesn't it?
It does seem to. It does seem to. Yeah.
Okay.
Look, I think you're an absolute treasure, and I think you should be very, very proud of what you've done and what you're trying to do. And I certainly hope that you can find a way to carry on. And I'm certain there's an awful lot of children that are hoping the same thing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm actually very ordinary, but ordinary people can do extraordinary things if they just follow their calling and, you know, have some determination. And I'd like to see kids, I'd like to see these kids have some resilience built into them and some resolve and determination. But, you know, when they can't have access to us and our lovely horses as well, it lessens their chances of having some result, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, I mean, I think I've spent this entire interview just wondering what the hell, how does this actually come about? Where, you know, you've got someone like you that is doing such a fantastic thing and the government's just taking it all away. I honestly don't know what to say.
The biggest belief, yeah. I've done a lot of crying over it. There's probably still some to come, but, you know, we've got to stand firm. We've got to be steadfast and not let anyone make us do something we don't want to do. We all stick together and stand up for what we know is right. Perhaps something may happen. I really don't know.
Let's hope so. And there are a lot of people like you that are willing to stand up and not going to give in. And I guess we'll just carry on fighting, won't we?
That's right. That's what we do. Yep. Yes. Yep. Yes.
But Ross, thank you very much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. I've learned a huge amount. And as I said, I think you're absolutely wonderful and far from ordinary. So thank you very much. And I can talk to you again.
I'd love to talk to you again. Thank you for the opportunity.
Perfect. Thank you, Ross. I'll speak to you later. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Five days after recording that interview, I received the following text. Hi, Alan. The first of my horses to be rehomed went out the gate and out of my life today. The pain was intense. And he's just the first of several, with as good as made the decision to close the league up. Jacinda Ardern, what the f*** are you doing? Seriously, how is this proportionate? Get a grip. I might have to bleep out that swear word, I guess, but seriously, this government is unbelievably bad. And the sooner we get rid of them, the better. I'm over it. I'm over this government. I'm over what they're doing with the vaccine mandates. And take a breath. I'll be back soon. Okay, I'm back to my cool, calm, and collected self. Don't know about you, but I found Ross to be intelligent, articulate, informative, and caring. I'd much rather have her in charge of her mental health than the Muppets we've got in charge today. Right, that's all, folks. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a thumbs up, subscribe or like or whatever you have to do on your platform to help us grow the show. If you want to reach out, you can contact me at unjabcitizen@gmail.com. That's unjabcitizen@gmail.com.
Until next week.